Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, incorporating Mazda's customer-centric vehicle design by making the customer the center of business to create a better car buying experience. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. What can we learn about our history through the eyes of modern artists? That question is being explored, and some would argue answered, at the Mint Museum Uptown and their new exhibition, Southern Modern. The New York Times describes it as daring and revisionist. It accomplishes this through 100 or so paintings and prints and drawings exploring the South through the 20th century, from industrialization through Jim Crow and mass migration, and bringing together pieces from professional artists who worked below the Mason-Dixon line between 1913 and 1956. These collective works reveal things about the South of that time and dispel some preconceived notions about the region by revealing a different picture of life here then. Southern Modern explores a South you may not have seen or considered through a wide range of genres, including Impressionism, Cubism, and Surrealism. To take us through this artistic exploration of Southern history, we get some help from Jonathan Stolman. He's the Senior Curator of American Art at the Mint Museum and the co-curator of this exhibit. He's with us along with Pam Grundy. Welcome back, Pam. She is a historian in Charlotte and author of Legacy, 3 Centuries of Black History in Charlotte, North Carolina. Good morning to everybody. Thanks for being here.
Good morning, Mike.
Morning.
Hey, Mike. Thanks for having us.
Jonathan, you're welcome. Thank you. Let me start with you because you've been working on creating this exhibition for about 10 years now. Talk about the seed of the idea, where it came from. And since you have said that very few exhibitions take a decade or more to come to fruition, why did it take a decade or more for this one to come to fruition?
Well, this one, you know, Mike, this one started really probably from about the moment that I got to the Mint, which was even more than a decade ago, back in 2006. And just digging into our collection, getting to know it at that point, thinking about reinstalling our collection of American art in the, you know, what was then not even a hole in the ground, our new building here in Uptown. And, you know, along the way, starting to see works by a whole range of artists that I had not encountered in my rather traditional you know, art history background, studying American art and working in a variety of places, primarily outside of the South. And so I was seeing artists that, you know, that weren't in my art history textbooks, that I wasn't seeing in, you know, museums I've been to in other parts of the country. And just, you know, thinking, wow, these are great works. Why am I not familiar with these artists? And, you know, the longer I was in the region, started going to other museums, started getting to know other colleagues and other private collectors. And, you know, having that experience over and over again, just the more time that I spent.
Yeah, you have said that when you came here, when you arrived in Charlotte, you didn't know all that much about Southern art, and your ideas, your preconceived notions about it were challenged after you went through the collection that the Mint had already compiled. And in fact, you say the South and its artists remain almost entirely absent from virtually every survey of American art, from textbooks, which you referred to a second ago, to recent projects devoted to looking closely at specific decades of artistic production in this country. Why?
Well, I think sometimes if you're not kind of in the region and involved with it, it's hard to kind of come across those histories. And I think it just, you know, the South, I think the general notion about what was going on in the South, and particularly during the time frame of the show, was that it was kind of a backwater. You know, maybe there are some artists who are still kind of working their way through Impressionism, but that, you know, there really wasn't a whole lot kind of going on here. And I think, you know, maybe that's a bigger picture of the history of our country at the time. You know, we tend to know the music a little bit better, the literature a little bit better that's part of the South during this period. And if we think of it, you know, maybe what was going on here, we think of, you know, in those shows that you mentioned, there's one that looked at American art of the 20s and another that looked at American art of the 30s. And these were shows, you know, produced by major institutions. And I think the only thing that appears from the South is some photography from the WPA era.
You bring up,
and you know, it was a time when New York, Philadelphia, Boston, even Chicago. I mean, these were kind of the art centers during
Yeah.
this time period.
Well, the
And that's where
South,
the histories got written.
the Pam, the South has been kind of a backwater, or considered to be a backwater by those in those media centers, which I want to talk about a little bit later on. But he mentioned the music. The South, music from the South has been very influential in American pop culture from the very beginnings and continued to be all through this period that art has kind of been in the back room hiding out. In that same time frame, 1913 to 1956, WBT radio became a really major factor, not just here, but around the country, because it produced shows for the CBS radio network that were very popular. The same thing is true of WBTV when it came on the air in the late 40s and helped fill the gaps that early television had around the country. Why then were we not more well known?
Well, I think one of the things I want to say about the music is often it's just as Jonathan said, there are stereotypes about the artist. There are stereotypes about the music that somehow it is old, it's rooted in the country, it's rooted in the old ways. But what's happening, particularly with WBT, there's new influences coming in, just like there are new artistic influences coming in. The social situation is changing. The city's bringing white rural people to the textile communities. They're bringing black rural people to places such as Brooklyn. And so you start to get this new, very vibrant music that comes out of it's starting in Charlotte. But what also happens is that centers move away, and Charlotte didn't really jump on the traditional music, the updated traditional music. They wanted to be a little more frou-frou, I think, and weren't that excited about it. And Nashville had more vision about that, so the center of that kind of music shifts to Nashville.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the story
Well,
of that.
and it also, as you sit here talking about this, Pam and Jonathan, it occurs to me that music is particularly good on the radio. Art is not.
That's right. That's right. You have to go see it in person.
And of course, early television of that time was in black and white, so you really couldn't fully appreciate works of art, even if they displayed them, and if, even if there was an audience for that on television.
Sure.
This exhibition has been on display at three other museums, I think, all in the
Right.
South, and now it travels here to the Midtown, where it will be in residence until February the 2nd. And it is said to open a window on the relationship between modernism and Southern art, which is something that really, I guess, has not been explored really until now. And as I said at the beginning, the New York Times calls this exhibition daring and revisionist. So let's unpack that. Why is it daring and revisionist?
Well, I think there are a couple of things that maybe are factoring into that. I mean, one is that our goal was my co-curator Martha Severns and I. So myself being a neophyte to what was going on in the South, I was kind of learning as I went, and we had a gathering here in Charlotte back in 2013 of museum professionals, collectors, academics from across the region to sit here and kind of talk about what this show could look like. Because as I was learning, I thought, well, what's the best way to really show all the things that I'm seeing? And my thought was it would be to bring together kind of the best works from across the region all in one place at one time. Because what had happened in the past was a lot of these shows, museums in different parts of the South, they might have had a show of artists who are significant in that region and produced a catalog, but it didn't kind of travel beyond, or the word didn't get out. And so there you could find lots of places, whether it's Montgomery or Birmingham or New Orleans, where within that community the works were well known and the artists were well known, but it wasn't kind of breaking through on a broader national scale. So kind of strength in numbers approach, you bring together the best of what you can find from all over. And in doing so, maybe one of the revisionist things is we didn't just look at work. When you think about the term modern, for art in particular, you tend to think about that kind of linear march from impressionism to post-impressionism to cubism, kind of towards abstraction. And a lot of, to be fair, a lot of that would tended to be happening in the major art centers, whether it was New York or Paris in particular, during the earlier part of this time. And so what was happening was a lot of artists from the South were going to these places, they were learning, and then they were bringing it back to the cities in the South and the places that they were from. So, the initial innovation might not have been happening here in the South, but it was spreading pretty quickly. So we do have a number of works in the show that demonstrate that. But the other thing that we did is to look at, a different kind of modernism, and that was artists who were engaging with and depicting contemporary life around them, the changing South. And so we're kind of bringing these two kinds of work, some of which tend to be more representational, and others of which tend to be more abstract, together to kind of look at the big picture.
We're talking about Southern Modern. It's a new exhibition at the Mint Museum through February 2nd, which really puts into context the Southern contribution to modern art, which most people in the country don't know about, and you don't know about it either until you go see this exhibition. And we're doing that this morning on Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Jonathan, you are the co-curator. I can't say that for some reason this morning. You're the co-curator of this exhibition, and yet it started at the Georgia Museum of Art, and it's traveled, I think, to several places in Tennessee before it came here. Why is it ending here? Why didn't it begin here?
Well, sometimes when you're the originator of a show, it often starts there. For us, we had an opportunity to take a little show about Picasso a couple of years ago, and that was the slot that was available, and so it was. We bumped ourselves to be the final venue for it, which turned out to be great because I got the chance to go and look at the ways that other museums had installed it and interpreted it and programmed around it, and gave me some time to think about what we wanted to do with it here. So that was nice.
How did this come together? I know that was it just you and your people at the Mint Museum, or did you collaborate with people from the Georgia Museum or the ones in Tennessee? How did you decide which works to include? Because it's 100 works. There could have been 1,000 in the show, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, so and one consideration is, of course, the space you have to put it in. So you have to think about your square footage of the galleries. So how we did it was we had a number of meetings early on with I think I mentioned one a minute ago of we had about 15 people here from all across the region, many different walks to kind of think about the parameters of the show. What were we going to define as the South? What was the time period, et cetera? And after that, my co-curator Martha Severns and I, and she had been for years a curator at the Greenville County Museum of Art, which focuses specifically on Southern art, as well as the Gibbs Museum in Charleston, which does likewise. And so she had kind of a deep base of knowledge and now consults with the Johnson Collection, which is a very significant collection of Southern art down in Spartanburg. So she had that basis, and I put in the time and my own scholarship, and we kind of consulting with colleagues from the Georgia Museum of Art and other places. Georgia Museum of Art has a long history of celebrating the work of Southern artists as well. So we kind of came up with our initial checklist, but then we, in a way, we kind of crowdsourced. We sent that checklist out to colleagues at museums all across the South, and said, "Hey, how does this look to you? Are we representing your region as best we could, as best we should? Is there anyone significant that we're overlooking?" And so we tried to be as inclusive as we could in that way to formulate that initial checklist.
This is not only a history lesson in the history of modern art and the South's contributions to it and how it fits into the panoply of modern art that was popular in the early 20th century around the country. It is also a history lesson about where we live and the contributions that history plays into the making of that art. So it's kind of all intertwined in this exhibit, Southern Modern. We're here with Jonathan Stillman, the senior curator of American art at the Mint Museum and the co-curator of the exhibition. And Pam Grundy will join us again, and we'll really talk about history in this next segment. She's the author of Legacy: 3 Centuries of Black History in Charlotte, North Carolina. And we'll talk about that and many other aspects of the early 20th century and art when we come back. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at mazdaofsouthcharlotte.com. www.charlottetalks.com. It's Charlotte Talks on listener funded 90.7 WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're here with Jonathan Stuhlman, senior curator of the Mint Museum of Modern of American Art, and the co-curator of Southern Modern, which is about modern art and the history of it in the South. Pam Grundy is also with us, a Charlotte historian. Jonathan, you have confined this exhibition to the early 20th century, from 1913 as a starting point to 1956 or so as an ending point. Why those parameters?
Well, for those who don't know deeply the history of modern art, 1913 was the year that the Armory Show made its debut here in America, in New York, and it's kind of widely recognized as the first major exhibition to introduce modern art to American audiences, and in particular in the work of artists like Picasso, Matisse, etc. So Cubism and Fauvism and those kinds of things that really kind of kicked off on a broad scale, both artists engaging with that from our country, but also the knowledge of kind of what modern art was in the American kind of public mind's eye.
This exhibition touches on Impressionism and Cubism and Surrealism and more, and it seems that it's all within a 50 years or 40 years span. It seems like a lot was going on back then with art, in changing art. Is the same thing happening today?
Well, I think what happened during that time is you kind of found all of these styles emerging, and there's so many different pathways that artists could pursue. And even within the exhibition, the very first work of art that you encounter in the show looks probably the least modern of anything in it. It's a beautifully rendered, very realistic portrait by Marie Hull, who is an artist working in Jackson, Mississippi. And it's a portrait of a Black gentleman from her community, John Wesley Washington. And she painted him a number of times throughout her career. And this one specifically she called an American citizen. And she notes, even inscribed on the back of the painting, that John Wesley Washington was born into slavery and saw the point of that title, an American citizen, was that during his lifetime, he had seen his status within this country change dramatically. But I think she was also posing a question with that title. Even though he technically had the title of an American citizen, did he truly have all of the rights that the title implied? And even she painted his shirt. He is wearing a blue and white shirt with a red tie, so kind of emphasizing that Americanness. But there's another painting by her in the show about halfway through, done less than a decade later, that is almost fully abstract. So I think just her in and of herself, that breadth of styles in which she could work from very representational to very abstract, and to be quite competent at both, I think speaks to the kind of how wide open it was for artists at that, during that period.
And the artists you've chosen, the works of these artists that you've chosen for this exhibition, are not all Southern-born artists. Many of them came from the North. And had been exposed to these different trends, Cubism, Surrealism, etc. Were they predominant influences on strictly Southern artists, or had those artists too witnessed what was going on and decided to move their work in this new direction?
Well, I think the range of artists in the show, I mean, we wanted to really focus on artists who are either from here or living and working here and having a significant impact in the region. So that was kind of first and foremost. A lot of artists from the South did go to New York or Paris or Chicago or wherever to train, and then came back because at the time there weren't a lot of opportunities for artistic training here in the region. But we did also include works by artists like, for example, Jacob Lawrence or Thomas Hart Benton, who were not from the region, but spent significant amounts of time here and created significant bodies of work here. And so they were kind of reflecting what they were seeing back on the national stage as well. And it is a mix. I mean, and you think of an artist like Romare Bearden, for example, who is, as we know here in Charlotte, a Charlotte native, yet he left when he was three and spent most of his career thereafter in New York. The reason that we included him is because even though he was in New York, so much of his work from the early works in the 40s in our show, all the way through the collages of the 70s and 80s, reflect back on his Southern experience, his Southern heritage, people he knew.
And the works in this exhibition, Pam, are reflective of what was going on in the South at the time. So give us a little history lesson. What was happening in Charlotte, in North Carolina, in the South at large between 1913 and 1956? What kind of changes were the people living at that time experiencing?
Well, it's a tremendously dynamic period. And I think it's important that we talked about the music at the beginning because what is happening, people are moving to cities, they're taking jobs, factory jobs. If you're white in Charlotte, you can take a job in a textile mill. If you're black, you can't work in the textile mills because they won't let you. But in Durham, there's the tobacco factories. Down in Birmingham, there's some wonderful images in the exhibit of the steel factories where there were a lot of black workers. So people are coming, they're getting it's a new kind of life. It's faster. Factories are faster than farms. You have to be more careful with the details so that you don't get your hand caught in the machine and which a lot of people did and become disabled. And so it's and the people are moving in. They're like in Brooklyn, if you look, there are clubs, there are social organizations like the YMCA, there are churches that have larger memberships and a really dynamic services. So it's a very dynamic period. And I want to move from this and talk about real quickly how important it is to go see this exhibit. Because if you think about the visual ideas that people have from the South in this time. Jonathan, you mentioned that WPA artists didn't really come here, but the WPA photographers did. And they took a lot of pictures that, in many ways, were quite stereotypical. They are black and white, they are static. And so you get this sense of this static, timeless world in a lot of ways. And I think what this exhibit does, it brings the color, it brings the dynamism, it gives you a sense of a region that's in movement, a region that's in transition. And so I just think it's so important to add that more dynamic, more colorful aspect to our visual understanding of what's happening during this period.
And that would not be the impression that most people, I would think, in other parts of the country who were living at the time about the South. They had very preconceived notions about this. I'm sure that they considered the South to be static, to be agrarian primarily, outside of cities like Atlanta and Birmingham, and today, I suppose, Charlotte. But this exhibition shows how the South was experiencing these changes that you're referring to, brought on by industrialization and urbanization. And although they might have been invisible outside this region, or simply not thought about, I suppose, how did they impact the South and ultimately the South of today? And is that progression reflected in these works of art, Pamela?
Well, I think again, they really do because there is a you again, you think about the modern world as having this, it does have a more quick, it has a faster tempo. And you hear that in the music, actually. The music speeds up, the music becomes more intertwined. You get something like the Golden Gate Quartet that's doing these close, peppy harmonies that's very different from the rural area. You get people like J.E. Maynard and his Mountaineers, or Bill Monroe and the development of bluegrass. Very different kind of sound and moving, 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 always changing, because that's human nature. Even though the pictures may make it look like nothing ever does change, it does. It's sort of moving and transforming. And so I think that that's again, the exhibit shows that. The exhibit shows change. The other thing that the exhibit does show, and I think this is very important. One tends to think of modern, one tends to think of moving forward in time as being wholly progressive, as being, oh, things are getting better, things are improving, we're losing these old, ways, particularly with race. Except that, of course, in the modern era, there's still control. During slavery, there was one kind of control of African Americans. In the modern era, there are others. There is segregation, which is modern form of control. There's lynching, which is more prominent after slavery ends. And again, a modern form of control. So you see these, that's actually kind of an interplay between, the dynamism of ordinary people and then the aspects of control that's being put down also on the textile mill workers with the mill. With the mill villages. Jonathan, maybe you can talk to how the pictures show that.
I think one of the things, when you go to the exhibition, it's divided into about seven different sections. And so I think looking at the interplay of those sections, I mean, there is a section on the landscape, and it's interesting. Most of the artists who are from the South were not depicting the landscape at the time in a particularly positive light. It was kind of barren. It was difficult to make your living from. You get to the section on the growth of cities and new industries, and you're seeing images of those steel industry in Birmingham, of sawmills. I mean, the South was a huge timber producing region of the country at the time to provide wood to build the cities that were emerging. And then there is a section on the Jim Crow era, and there are some really challenging images in there, and we thought that it was important to include images of that type.
Yes, as I was looking through some of these, and you mentioned the landscape, some of these pictures, they reflect the rural life of the time and the city life of the time. But no matter what you're looking at, it's hard scrabble. It's hardworking people struggling in a world where they are the underdog. The landscapes, as you point out, are often bleak, or and where they are not, people are depicted as working hard, so they don't really have time to enjoy those surroundings. And when it moves into industry, the people in those pictures appear to be experiencing something similar to what the people in the country are experiencing, but on an industrial scale, often caught up or depicted as being caught up, as being almost part of the machines and experiencing hardships, even as the industrialists profit. Am I making too much out of this?
No, I mean, I think it's accurate. And if you think about the period of history which the show is kind of based in, it's the Depression and what comes thereafter. And I think it is a it's a tough time. But there also there are some images that of musical gatherings, of community coming together, of baptisms, of things being looked at in a positive light. And I think one of the sections of the show also looks at the rise during this time. It's a period where we see a lot of cultural institutions opening their doors. I mean, the Mint opens its doors in 1936, as do many other museums in the region. And you also see the development specifically during this time. We just had a great panel discussion this past Saturday about the importance of HBCUs, and in particular, their art departments and art history departments. And that happens at all different colleges and universities around the region. That's when these departments are getting started. And so, the hope is that, you're not losing all of your students who have these interests to places in the North, that the South is starting to establish itself on this, in this area as a center where people can stay and learn and flourish.
We touched on race a second ago, at least Pam did, and I want to spend some time on it again a little bit later on. But because of our relationship with race in the South, other parts of the country maybe have the impression that we're very prejudiced. But it seems to me that perhaps that they have a prejudice as well, because at least when it comes to art, given their exclusion of Southern artists in the catalog of contributions to American art, would that be accurate?
Yeah, I mean, I think we're in a period, the past 10, 20 years when we're particularly sensitive to re-looking at history and becoming more inclusive and more accurate in who is making art and what stories need to be told, what stories have not been told. So I think, the South is not the only region of the country. You can find many different museums and scholars in different parts of the country looking at the art of the Northwest, the art of the West, the art of Chicago. There are certainly, I think there's a movement towards trying to tell a more inclusive national picture of the contributions of, really the wide range of artists in this country, and the South is a part of that.
And the New York Times described this, as I said at the beginning, as a revelation. And maybe they're talking about the fact it's a revelation because of the fact that we were engaged in producing this kind of art in the South in that time period from 1913 to 1956. But maybe it was a revelation because of the subject matter. If that's the case, Pam, should it have been a revelation?
Well, should it have been a revelation? I mean, of course not. I mean, ideally, everyone would know more about all the different parts of the country. There's certainly parts of the country I don't know about, but I think, and one of the challenges is these stereotypes, is the idea that, you know, one region is a certain thing, and the other region, like the West, is all the, you know, the strong pioneers, even though the West actually has more federal funds pumped than any other place.
We're talking about Southern Modern, the exhibition at the Mint Museum of Art through February 2nd this morning on Charlotte Talks on WFAE. One critic, Jonathan, said that nothing of importance in art in the 20th century happened in the South, south of Baltimore. Let's put it that way. Why was that the prevailing opinion, and how difficult has it been to dispel that belief?
Well, that was a curator at the Metropolitan Museum of Art in 1949. So he was in that, you know, kind of the heart of the period we're talking about. And I think so. I'll reveal my age. I went to college in the 90s, and my textbook, my American art history textbook, I think for the time was fairly progressive. It had a painting on the cover by Mary Cassatt, so you're foregrounding a female artist. I think one of the later chapter headings had a work by Romare Bearden. Maybe going into the 70s and 80s. But other than that, there's almost nothing in that textbook of the South except maybe some early, you know, early churches in Virginia, some of that early colonial architecture. And I think, you know, Charleston is kind of the lone exception in being a major port city, and the furniture of Charleston has kind of been appreciated in some of the early portraits that were done there.
Does that speak to something deficient within the world of art, maybe the snobbery of people in the world of art? Because the South was producing, as Pam mentioned, music that was pushing the envelope and progressing us along the way. It was producing literature that people clung to. I mean, people love Southern authors and Southern novels, Southern writing. It was happening in architecture. Southern architects were very influential. What happened in the art world where they did not have the same influence in that period?
Well, I think it part of it goes back to what I mentioned earlier, and that, you know, to become an artist, you kind of needed training. So if you think back even to early American history,
But
you
that's
know,
true of
not
everything I just mentioned. You had to be a trained musician, you have to be a trained architect, you have to be a good writer, you have to have some training, I would
yeah,
think.
sure. I mean, I think, Pam, go ahead.
well, no, I was going to say you have training, but it's a different kind. You know, to be a musician at this time, you're essentially trained in your community. I mean, these musicians, you know, the Golden Gate Quartet, the you know, the hillbilly musicians, they learn from elders in their community. They learn it's passed down, and then they get these other influences like the radio, and they move the art along. You don't have to go to school to be a musician. You don't have to have, you know, you don't have to invest in canvas and paint and all the things that it takes actually to be a visual artist. So I do think that the painting and those things are quite different in terms of the kind of training
Pam Grundy
that's
is a Charlotte
required.
historian, author of Legacy, 3 Centuries of Black History in Charlotte. We're coming right back. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on listener funded, excuse me, 90.7 WFAE and WFAE.org. I'm Mike Collins. Jonathan Stillman is with us. He's senior curator of American art at the Mint Museum and co-curator of the Southern Modern exhibition, installed until February the 2nd. Pam Grundy is a Charlotte historian and author, and she's with us to talk about the history of this region as depicted in this art, in this exhibition. And I think you want to follow up on something because you have your hand in the air, Pam. Go ahead.
I do, yes, because I think it's important. Again, I'm talking about community forms of art. And of course, there's visual community forms of art as well. I'm thinking really about quilting. And there's beautiful quilts being made in this time with the scraps of fabric people have around. It's a tradition handed down that then is, you know, that then is modified and elaborated upon. So there's always this kind of creativity. I think one of the problems with stereotypes is you're not looking. You don't assume that everybody's creative. You don't assume that if you don't see it, you should be looking harder, or you should be looking somewhere else because it's there and it's going to come out. And I think Jonathan, once Southerners had access to these materials, once they did get the training, once they could get the paint and the canvas, you see that happening. I think that's part of what the exhibit's about.
Yeah, and Mike, to follow up on that, I was thinking while Pam was talking, one of the challenges that art has that other forms of creative expression don't necessarily is that A, you have to come and see it, so there has to be somewhere to go and see it, and B, it relies on an ecosystem of sales and where are the galleries, where are the people who can afford to buy it, and those things tended to cluster in the traditional
Yeah.
centers of the arts in this country, whether it's New York or Boston, et cetera. So I think that factors into it with the fine arts in a way that it doesn't even, for something like Pam was mentioning, quilting or other traditional forms.
As I understand it, Black artists are given prominence in this exhibition. How does their inclusion change or challenge the narrative of Southern art?
Well, it's a complex part of the show because a number of the Black artists that are included left the South. I mean, Bearden, John Biggers, for example, is another one from nearby Gastonia. Malvin Gray Johnson was born in Greensboro, left the South. So this is a period of great migration of artists and Black families in general, leaving the South to seek more freedom, more opportunity in other parts of the country. But we did feel someone like Biggers as well. I mean, his early work was, again, always reflecting back on those traditions and family and his roots in the South. So I think that's, it's an important part of the story. It's important to include their work, but it's also important to acknowledge that they did not face hospitable conditions working here in the South either.
A lot of people outside the South have viewed the region as anchored in the past and resistant to change, very conservative. Modern art, just by definition, seems from the Impressionist period on through, seems to be a movement that is about change. And it too had some resistance in
Sure.
artistic circles because it was new, it was untested, it wasn't like what had come before. And that applies to social movements. According to William Ferris, professor of history emeritus at UNC Chapel Hill, Pam, in the South, modernity was viewed as a racial threat by some white Southerners who created and strove to maintain a mythic South symbolized by Southern belles and columned mansions. Are they partly to blame for the fact that those in the art world don't think of the South as a modern art movement, a place for the modern art movement?
Well, I think when you speak of the South as conservative, you're really looking at a group of people who are attempting to maintain a hierarchy. Well, they have this hierarchy that existed in the 19th century and before. And so they're trying to keep, the people on top who are wealthy and white on top and keeping other people in. They refer to their place. And you have a breakdown of that after the Civil War, but then there really is built up a quite similar hierarchy, where you have the mill owners, you have the store owners, you have the bankers, and then you have the people working in the mills, you have the African Americans who, in some places, again, working in the tobacco mills, working in the steel mills, but then also fulfilling all these different kinds of jobs, gardening, as maids, as cooks, all these sort of, in some ways, similar roles. And the challenge of modernism, of course, is you don't have that full control. People are living in different places. People are living in Brooklyn. They are able to communicate with each other and act in different ways, again, in more dynamic and not static ways. I think the people who ran things were perfectly good with dynamism for themselves, modernism for themselves, but they really did hold on to this idea of a hierarchy. And when art challenges that, then it is controversial.
I want to mention that for people who are newcomers to the area, that the Brooklyn that you've referred to several times in this conversation was actually Second Ward in Charlotte, what is now where the Aquatic Center is and the government buildings are. That was Brooklyn, and it was a thriving African American neighborhood until urban renewal came along. Jonathan, writing in that companion book to this exhibition, Professor Ferris from UNC Chapel Hill says, "Southern Modern, the exhibition, reminds us that modernism is a key to understanding the evolving American South and how its people grappled with the past and the demons of racism, classism, and sexism. Were those themes that emerged while you were putting together this grouping of artistic works, or were these themes something you wanted to demonstrate by putting this exhibition together?
Probably some of each. I mean, I think as we were working on picking the works we felt were best for the show, we were creating the parameters. You know, the goal of the show, A, was to show that the South was not dead during this period, that it was not a backwater, that there was a lot going on, and to bring all of these works together to demonstrate that, and that what was being made here was, you know, of artistic merit and had something to say. As we did that, you know, the contributions of women, of Black artists, of people from all across the region kind of became more evident, and those works started to kind of reflect those themes and those ideas. So, you know, we didn't go into the putting together the checklist saying, okay, we need works that touch on this, works that touch on that. We got together the best works we could, and then we kind of looked over them and said, what are they saying to us? Yeah. And that's what determined the different sections of the exhibition is kind of what the works themselves were saying about the region during this time.
And Professor Ferris talks about this exhibition's demonstrating how the South grappled with the demons of racism. I'm wondering, Pam, if that's really true. There are depictions of Black and white Southerners, but as the gallery descriptions point out, they are rarely seen together. In fact, only two works depict or even hint at an interaction across racial lines. Would it follow then that though the art many have been moving in, even though art has been moving in a modern direction, that the culture of the South in that period from 1913 to 1956 wasn't keeping pace?
Well, I think you have to look again at different aspects of the culture. Things are moving more in some ways than in others. I mean, that really is this era, the cradle of the civil rights movement. People talk about the long civil rights movement that really starts with leaders building up community capacity, even though at the time in the 20s and the 30s, you know, when there are things like lynching, there's only so much you could do to challenge the hierarchy that I described, but they're building up capacity. So then when after World War II comes and it becomes more possible to challenge, then it's all there. And it seems like it's exploding out of nowhere, but it's actually been built up over all those years. And so I think that's important. Sometimes things are going on under the surface that don't show up until later. And it's funny, I mean, mentioning that you don't see the Blacks and whites together. I mean, that's so interesting because there were interactions all the time, every day. I mean, particularly there, again, the most of them were hierarchical, but, you know, people, African-Americans were mowing the lawns and tending the gardens and cooking the food and taking care of the children. So it is actually interesting that you don't see any of that. And Jonathan, I bet you can talk to that.
Yeah, I was going to say the clip you mentioned, two images of Blacks and whites together. That's in the first section of the show, which is called Southerners, which is artists kind of showing the people around them. But as you go through the rest of the show, you know, there's not a ton of images of that, but there are more certainly that speak to those, some of those interactions. And you know, the other thing we grapple with is who's depicting whom. And so there are a number of images by Black artists of Black subjects, and there are a number of images by white artists of Black subjects. And I think for the most part, you know, we're conscious of that. We're conscious of who's depicting who and how that's being done. And for the most part, the white artists were often considered themselves as part of, you know, a broader community. A lot of the white artists, particularly those from Alabama, Mississippi, they grew up in just as much of a hardscrabble existence as the Blacks around them, who they considered to be their friends and neighbors. And so they were depicting people familiar to them that were parts of their daily lives.
The New York Times art critic Walter Mims writes that the painters in this show echo what historian C. Vann Woodward later called the irony of Southern history, the fact that as America dominated the global stage from the Monroe Doctrine to World War II, the South persisted in a long line of self-destructive, embarrassing regressions from a feudal regime to a secession attempt to an apartheid state. Are the artists and the works in this exhibition pushing back against those regressions, revealing them as misguided artifacts of the past by looking at them through a modern art lens, or are they merely depicting those things with a different slant?
I think it's a mix of each. I mean, I think you do see some artists acknowledging that, you know, the difficulties and challenges that surrounded them in the South, but you also see them as pushing towards something new, something better. So it's a lens that's, on one hand, acknowledging what life was like here at that time, but on the other hand, looking towards progression. Like I said earlier, it was a time when you were seeing the opening of museums, the existence of art colonies, of artists groups, of art departments being founded. So there's, I think there is that kind of movement forwards towards something better that's being reflected in what they're seeing and showing that, you know, artists in the South are interested in engaging with many of the ideas, certainly that they learned during their studies in New York, in Paris, et cetera, but that they want those things to flourish here as well. They're coming back and sowing those seeds.
Pam.
And I want to say, again, I want to emphasize, you see some of the bias in that statement as well, because, as I said, many of these things are modern. You know, segregation is not a throwback to a past. It is a modern institution. And of course, in the North, they may not have had segregation, but they had all sorts of layers of racism, of cutting off of opportunity. It's very different. And I wouldn't say, you know, equivalent, but it's, you have to look at it in this more complex way. And I think it's actually interesting, you know, you say, you know, we don't see blacks and whites together. If you had that, you know, authentically, it would have depicted this hierarchy. It would have depicted, hopefully it wouldn't have been the, you know, the nostalgic, oh, you know, I love my, you know, black nursemaid. I love my black, you know, housekeeper. But I can see why these modern artists wanting to be modern would not show those things, would not be interested in painting those interactions.
We're talking about Southern Modern, the new exhibition at the Mint Museum through February 2nd on Charlotte Talks on WFAE. This exhibition, Jonathan, features works of the early 20th century from 1913 to 1956, prior to any significant civil rights movement in the South or around the country, prior to the South emerging as the, quote, New South, unquote, with integration in bloom and an eye toward becoming more progressive and an economic powerhouse. So if you had decided to focus on the works from 1956 to the present, what would you have discovered? What difference would we see?
Do that show to find out, Mike. I mean, the reason we stopped there, it was kind of, as you said, it felt like to us, it was a moment where the South kind of became more integrated into the national picture, so to speak, whether it was through, you know, the emergence of media like television, whether it was through the development of the interstate system, whether it was, you know, the emergence of the civil rights movement around that time. I mean, there were, you know, there's so much going on that seemed to be kind of an inflection point that it felt like a natural point to end the exhibition. I mean, I think you'd tend to see more progressive art being made in the South, continuing after that point in time. And I think you'd see the South and Southern artists kind of being incorporated a little bit more into that national story.
Well, you learn about the Southern artists and the South's contribution to modern art through this exhibition. You also learn about our history. And I guess the whole point of looking back on history, Pam, is to learn from it and to see where we came from. Does this exhibition accomplish that in your mind in some way?
I think it does, in the sense that it makes it clear the South came from an enormously dynamic past. It wasn't this static, unchanging, I mean, we said this before, you know, regressive era. There were things that were very problematic about it, that were awful, but that it was this lively, colorful, dynamic place. And a lot of what we see today came out of that. It's not a total transformation, it's an evolution in many
Yeah,
ways.
so I have
And
about
I'll
45 I have about 45 seconds left. It was the curator of the New York Metropolitan Museum of Art in 1949 who said that nothing of artistic merit was made south of Baltimore. This exhibition has been described by the New York Times as daring and revisionist, and yet it's staying below the Mason-Dixon line. Why isn't it traveling to museums in the North, in the Midwest, Jonathan?
Sure. Well, it wasn't for lack of trying. And I think it speaks to the fact that, when we talk to my colleagues at those museums, it's an economic choice. It costs something to bring a show somewhere, and they felt like it wouldn't appeal to their audiences.
So they're
So that's why the,
choosing to
yeah.
remain ignorant.
Well, that's why there's a book. The book exists after the show, and it can go everywhere.
Jonathan
And it's a
Stoltman, the
great
senior
book.
curator of American art at the museum, co-curator of Southern Modern, Pam Grundy, also with the Charlotte historian, author of Legacy, 3 Centuries of Black History in Charlotte, North Carolina. That exhibit runs at the Mint Uptown through February 2nd. Thanks for the hour.
Charlotte Talks with Mike Collins is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from Mazda of South Charlotte. The senior producers are Gabe Altieri and Sarah D'Elia. Our engineer is Joby Sprinkle. For more information about Charlotte Talks, to listen to past episodes, or subscribe to the Charlotte Talks podcast, visit wfae.org/charlottetalks. Additional support for WFAE programming comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, using Mazda's customer-centric approach to cars to create a car buying and servicing experience where the customer is the center of their business. More at mazdaofsouthcharlotte.com.